Given that your car or light truck is going to need service sooner or later, and often, waiting until later means a lot bigger repair bill. Now, there are many repair shops in town, so it pays to do your research and find out where your friends and neighbors take their vehicles and check reviews online as well. Advanced Automotive of Reading is listed on RepairPal.com, where customers just like you talk about their experience. Advanced Auto has been making quality auto care easy since 1993 and has a philosophy of keeping things simple. Stop by their shop at 5756 F West Side Road, just off Bonneview. You'll see vehicles from local businesses and first responders in the yard because those customers rely on cars and trucks that are safe and reliable. But more than that, safe vehicles mean a safer community. And honestly, it's the right way to do business. Check them out for yourself. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Reading, 244-4423. Hello and welcome to Boomer Tech Radio. I am Bob Belongi.
I'm Alan Belongi.
We are analog, living in a digital world. Welcome to the program with goodies, gadgets, gizmos, and the tech news that you can use. We're opening the show with my son Alan on the Skype line. Brenda will be joining us later on in the show, but we wanted to get kicked off and hitting the ground running. Fair amount of tech news this week as technology runs into the legal system, because where there's technology and there's ways to make a quick buck, some people will, they'll just go and make a quick buck. Now, there are some brands, Birkenstock, for example, who will not sell their product via Amazon. If you see Birkenstocks on Amazon, they are probably just Chinese knockoffs. And it's not just unique to footwear. There's chargers. I would not buy an Apple charger off of Amazon because there's a high possibility, especially if it's at a really, really, quote, good price, because there's a high probability that you may be getting a complete piece of junk that it, at best, doesn't work, at worst, may destroy your phone, and it won't be covered by warranty because you used a non-Apple product, even though it's got Apple all over it. And this is a big thing that Amazon's trying to figure out how to deal with. Right, Alan?
Yeah. And it's a particular problem because the Amazon uses what's called a Fulfillment by Amazon, which is a service they offer to it's essentially for both consumers and for sellers, where they take care of pretty much everything in the middle. They take the item from the seller, warehouse it, pack it, ship it to you, and then they take your money, take their cut, and then give it to the seller. So they do pretty much all the work, but they're not legally the seller, and obviously they're not the buyer because, you know, you're the buyer. But it makes it feel like, to a lot of people, whenever they see Fulfilled by Amazon, that is actually being provided by Amazon, when that's not the case, which protects them from any, you know, liability of counterfeiting or, you know, fraudulent items, but it's confusing to people that don't know the actual rules of the trade.
So they give the appearance that they are standing behind the sale. Just like if you buy something from a brick-and-mortar store, you take it home, it is defective, or you discover that it is not as advertised, you can take it back to that store and say, hey, this isn't right, make it right. And Amazon's saying, well, you know, we're just the middleman, you're going to have to take it up with the seller. Is that kind of what's going on?
Pretty much is their policy. I mean, that's their legal standpoint. I mean, they often will try their best to, you know, make customers happy because that's what they want to happen. But for bigger items or bigger problems, they do have this, you know, kind of cover for it because, well, it's actually pretty smart because them not being the seller, technically, means they aren't responsible for the users get in the end. And it is causing some issues because there's an awful lot of, like you mentioned in there earlier, Apple chargers, as well as like Adidas footwear and all sorts of other different things that are really just Chinese knockoffs. And while Amazon doesn't have the greatest capacity to police everything, they do let, you know, official retailers, not retailers, but manufacturers of goods actually let them know when a bad product is being sold. But it's a little too reactive, and some people claim it's not being proactive enough to actually, you know, protect consumers.
Last week we talked about people being cut off from Amazon because, well, they would sort of, in Amazon's mind, they were abusing the return process. They'd get five different sizes and return four of them because they could. They would order something, use a couple of pieces, oh, something's wrong with it, or they would get a big one is, of course, buying a prom dress, wearing it, and sending it back.
That's just lame.
Yeah, but people do it, and they essentially abuse the system. Another thing that people are really starting to find fault with Amazon on is the growing evidence that a lot of the one of the things about buying on Amazon is that you look at the reviews when you're weighing which product to order, you look at the reviews and you kind of go by those. Now, a lot of fake reviews are badly written, but there are people who are making $5 a pop to purchase an item, write a good review, and then turn around and send it back and pocket the $5. Amazon's starting to clamp down on those as well. And it is sort of, they're losing a little bit of customer confidence, right?
Yeah, since they would much rather, you know, their review sections be as accurate as possible, because the amount of any returns they have to process is kind of a pain in the butt for them, no matter whether the customer was in the right or not, because that's a lot more work on their end. They have to get customer service involved. They have to have actually somebody look at the product, et cetera, et cetera. And it's hard to necessarily figure out if someone bought it just for review or not. But, you know, oftentimes if somebody does return a product like that in the scenario you laid out, that review tends to go away simply because if you bought it and you left a good review, why would you return it?
Yeah.
But you could also buy it, leave a negative review in case your competitor,
that happens, you know, a lot,
pays you to leave bad reviews for a competition's product and then return it, and that doesn't seem as odd, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you're talking about these vast sums of money that change hands back and forth, a lot of misbehavior will take place.
Yeah, I have some weird issues with online reviews occasionally where you get, oh, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. It's my favorite thing in the world. And another one that's right below it that says, this is the worst thing I've ever gotten. When I got it, it kicked my dog and drowned my fish.
Right.
I mean, like, how it can't be both of these things, people. So it's hard to necessarily judge things only on their online reviews.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's a good starting point. A lot of people tend to focus on the negative reviews, like something that has like a million positive reviews has like two negative reviews about dog kicking and fish drowning. But they might have just had a bad one, or they weren't the kind of person that would be happy no matter what.
Or they may simply be too incompetent to use the product. I've seen that, too.
That happens a lot. Or when people leave negative reviews because, like, the shipping went wrong or like, it got wet or something.
The FedEx guy dropped it, you know.
It's not really the product's fault.
Correct.
Whatever.
We talk a lot about the good and bad sides of technology, and certain aspects of technology, especially in the realms of surveillance, give people the heebie-jeebies. Words like Orwellian and Big Brother. The technology has enabled the surveillance state, and there's some people who believe that they are under observation for some reason. The government wants to follow them around. And one of the tools that has come into use through artificial intelligence is facial recognition. Now some folks are pushing back.
Well, facial recognition, like in Facebook, you know, you upload a picture and it automatically detects, hey, that's John or whatever. You know, it's just able to detect that that person is that person, which is a little disconcerting to me. But the more pictures that a computer, the AI, looks at, the better it is at figuring out that person, right? Well, there's been some researchers at University of Toronto that have actually put together a program that, prior to photos being uploaded, makes extremely minute to the human eye changes that really throws off any sort of algorithm to try to detect faces. People would never really notice the difference between the two, but it's enough to make detection algorithms not know who this person is.
Ah, okay. So a little bit of, and this is commonly done in Photoshop, a little facial distortion. We normally use it to fix a problem, but this is actually introducing errors that put a big amount of question into the algorithm that's trying to identify the person then.
Right. And then, you know, it's a learning program, you know. It makes a slight alteration, and then it sends it over to the other one, and then if it's able to detect it, it's able to figure out, okay, so that didn't work, so try something else. So it gets better and better every time it does its thing of how to distort it just enough to where the facial recognition can't figure it out. And from beginning to end, when they were doing these tests with this disruptive AI, it went from a 100% recognition from the recognition software down to a 0.5% accuracy rate after it went through the distorter.
No matter what tools are thrown at people, people will figure out a way around them. It's a big cat and mouse game. There was quite a bit of consternation because a Florida police department had installed this software on some cameras looking out in front, and they said, no, we're not surveilling people, we've only got 5 faces in the database, and we're just testing it, and people are going, well, especially civil liberties folks are going, why are you testing it if you have no intention of actually deploying it?
Yeah, what would be the point of testing something if you don't intend to use it?
Right.
I mean, the point of testing something to make sure it works when you use it.
Yeah, that's why all the consternation over North Korea.
Yeah, that's kind of like the facial recognition that China's been really implementing, where they've got the cameras at their intersection, everything, recognizing every single person that walks through there.
Right, and there was a story some weeks ago about an individual who was wanted, went to a, I think it was a soccer game or something like that, and there was 100,000 people in this stadium. And the system picked him out, and 2 officers went up into the stands and plucked him out. That is scary. Now, some people will say, well, look, I've never done anything, but suppose that a wrong entry gets made into the database and you are flagged. We're moving into that whole enemy of the state scenario where everywhere you go, we're worried enough about companies tracking our every move, both through cyberspace and through the real world. And right now, we're talking about it being used as a law enforcement tool, watching for, you know, kidnapped children. There are stories about, well, we can use this to disrupt human trafficking. But let us suppose, for the sake of argument, that a malevolent government is using this stuff, as is the case in certain parts of the world.
For sure.
Yeah, now you've got a methodology of tracking everyone everywhere without any them having to carry anything. And that's just a little bit disturbing. But I'm willing to bet that people find a way around these things.
Right. And pretty much any technology that can be used will probably be misused at some point.
Exactly. Speaking of something that was probably misused, of course, Facebook's trending feature, people were laughing because they were calling it the day after Twitter, because breaking news stories would appear, and they were already well into the so-called 24-hour news cycle. So after 4 years of trying to push news, which most people, I certainly ignored, Facebook is going to drop the trending box, right?
Yeah, essentially people weren't really paying attention to it. They people would find ways to game it, get silly things to come up on it, and it caused way more headaches than it was worth for Facebook, because if something bad went up on the trending thing, it would cause people like, oh, you're promoting this bad thing or whatever, people yelling at Facebook. So they're like, ah, forget it, and you just decide to scrap it. And in the end, I don't think anybody really cared.
Right. Well, Zuckerberg had said for several years that he wanted Facebook to be everybody's destination for everything, more than social media. He wanted it to be your communication method, to be your news source, to be how things get, be able to check in during disasters. Well, all that data started ending up in the wrong hands, and people had a serious, very serious concern about that, Facebook just wasn't using their data in the best way. And in fact, I understand a growing, the teens moving away from Facebook has gone into pretty much a free fall. The numbers among under 30 are just plummeting with regards to who uses Facebook. Well, it's old, it's been out there for, 7 years, so it's old.
Teens like the new hip thing, and Facebook is not the new hip thing. When your grandma's using it, it's not the new hip thing. but a lot of teens have actually started moving on to this, site of choice, actually being YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Which is odd, since YouTube has been around for a while, but I was reading a rather humorous story about a young man who wasn't using a lot of common sense. What was his? I'll have to pull the story up here later on in the show. Anyway, he essentially was live streaming. Life streaming, they call it.
Oh, is this Arab Alex?
Yeah, Arab Alex. Alex. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was live streaming, and he faked like a school attack, and boy, did they come down on him like a ton of bricks, as they should have.
Yeah, he had like a bunch of wires on him or whatever, because he was, had a speaker on him and recording device and all that, and then he had a little speaker on there that said, the C4 is primed, and it started a countdown. It's like, in a public place.
This is like walking up to the TSA agent and saying, hey, I got a bomb in my pocket. That's a good way to end up kissing linoleum.
Yeah, so but things like that, live streaming and personalities online, are really what's drawing a lot of these kids to the YouTube channels, with their favorite YouTuber and essentially people making their own shows on YouTube for kids to consume, and then they can share it with all their friends and talk about whatever it is, and they feel a lot more connected to these people than people on the magical TV box, because they actually might respond to your comments, or if they only have 20 people watching them, then they're a heck of a lot more likely to pay attention to you when you say something on there.
Yeah, I don't know, though. You just call me, a curmudgeon, but it seems to be mostly how can people out-stupid each other.
That's what a good majority of it is.
People are doing, of course, are watching their Facebook on their smartphones, but smartphones are apparently when you drop $1,000 on a handset, you tend to want to hang on to it for more than just 2 years. So people and the industry seems to have backed itself in the corner by making very capable, very expensive handsets, which do not turn over inside of 2 years. So shipments are declining, right?
Yeah. So in 2016, shipments were the slowest growing at like a total of 2% overall growth in total shipments, which is from the factory to stores, by the way, in case you don't know what shipments is. And then this last year, 2017, actually had a decrease of 0.5%. So the first time ever since smartphones were introduced that actually started going the other way in total number of shipments. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with market saturation. For one, pretty much everybody that would get a smartphone already has one. And then for two, they're lasting longer. Tech companies are doing their darndest to make sure phones kill themselves, you know, with certain over time, you know, their batteries die and then they send out those Cupertino death rays that cause the phones to not work anymore. Because the battery's going bad or something or other, I don't know. It's a pretty lame excuse.
Well, that
but
blew
anyway.
Up in their face.
Yeah. So between all these different things, it's finally started to slow down. And that's not inherently a bad thing for the market. I mean, smartphones are still extremely popular, and it's not like they're going to go away anytime soon. But it's just the market finally starting to level out a little bit.
Right. And it happens with any new technology. I mean, geez, PC sales exploded for a few years. They've leveled off. However, recently, the PC is establishing itself because it can do things that we still haven't managed to cram into a handset or tablet form factor, i.e., trying to play something like Skyrim or Elder Scrolls Online on a tablet. I don't see that happening anytime soon. You don't have the controls or the real estate to make it happen.
Yeah, the main thing for me why a computer is better is a monitor, for one.
Yeah.
And then the power would be number two.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Your battery only lasts for so long, or then you're tethered to the wall. So we talked about teens always connecting through Facebook, running away from running away from Facebook, always connecting on YouTube, and they're doing it most of the time on their devices. And essentially, a report says almost half of American teens, and this is a disturbing thing, although you have to do is look around and notice it, almost half of American teens are almost always online.
Right. About 45% of American teens say, well, it's, you know, self-reporting for the most part, but it does come from Pew Research, which is pretty credible, that they're pretty much always online. On their phone, and they check it at least once an hour. Their news feed, media feed, their favorite website, etc., which is ridiculously high. And now the by gender, it's a little interesting. 50% of girls say they're always online, whereas only about 40% of boys said so. So
see that.
Girls check their phones more often than guys. That's surprising.
There was always the stereotype of the girl on the phone for, you know, for hours and hours on end, whereas guys call up, say, hey, how you doing? Hey, we're going out for some beer. Yeah, let's meet. Okay, call's done.
Right. And now if you compare it to the poll results of in 2015, only about 25% of teens said they were online almost constantly.
Hmm.
So it's almost doubled the amount of people that say they're online almost constantly.
And they're not going on Facebook, so mostly it's YouTube, and of course Snapchat is still holding in there, WhatsApp, and other social media platforms, mostly trying to impress each other or mocking each other on Twitter or engaging in body shaming. Who knows?
All sorts of different things. Oh, these crazy kids.
Lots of distractions out there. Well, we hope you don't get distracted here at the top of the hour, because we're going to break away. We're going to come back with Alan for our second segment right after the bottom of the hour break. You are listening to Boomer Tech Radio with Bob Belongi and Alan Belongi. We'll be back with more of the tech news that you can use right after these messages.
It might be the car or light truck that gets you to your job every day. Maybe your child drives it to school. Or perhaps your drivers deliver goods to the customers who keep your business going. The bottom line is, you rely heavily on that vehicle to be safe and reliable day after day, and that means regular maintenance by professionals trained in the latest automotive repair techniques. For Brenda and myself, that means Advanced Automotive is the only repair shop we trust with our personal vehicles. Advanced Automotive does everything they can to make car care easy. Founded in 1993 by Tim Morlock and now owned by his son Cody, carrying on a tradition of honest work at a fair price. Find out for yourself by visiting AdvancedAutoReading.com or go to RepairPal.com, or you could just call 530-244-4423. It's a great little repair shop that's a bit hard to find, but worth the effort, at 5756 F West Side Road in Reading. Advanced Automotive.
Hi, this is Sharon Clark, owner of Home Helpers. Join me at 9 a.m. every Wednesday for Generations Talk Radio, right here on KCNR 1460. Topics will include resources and businesses that you need to know about. We will talk money, travel, healthcare, and more. Embrace aging. Listen to Generations Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. here on KCNR 1460. Archive shows at generationstalkradio.com.
I am Dan, owner of Dan's Optical Lab. For years, I've made prescription eyewear for other eye doctors throughout the North State. Now I'm opening my lab directly to the public. You can purchase the highest quality in prescription eyewear, but directly from the lab. That means you get it faster and you get it for less. I don't just sell prescription eyewear, I make it. And because I do, I have to know more about the lens materials, designs, and frames that are available. If you want the highest quality in prescription eyewear, then go where the doctors go, Dan's Optical Lab, faster for less.
One of the most important tenets of your life is ensuring that your loved ones are cared for even after you're gone. Having a will is important, but can be bogged down in probate court for years. What are your options? Douglas Wright, attorney at law, specializes in estate planning and probate matters. Does a living trust solve all your legal concerns? Douglas Wright will guide you through the many legal aspects of planning for your future and the future of your loved ones. Douglas Wright Law, a professional corporation, 530-243-6000 or Douglas Wright Law.
At Powerhouse Solar, we understand that each home has unique energy needs. We custom design your solar energy system to not only meet those needs, but to allow for growth, just in case you see a pool, spa, or electric car in your future. Hi, I'm Sue Blake, co-owner of Powerhouse Solar. At Powerhouse Solar, we are experts at designing and installing quality systems utilizing SunPower Solar. We install the SunPower package because it includes the panels, built-in microinverters, racking, and monitoring. One company and a bumper-to-bumper 25-year warranty. No other solar company compares to SunPower. At Powerhouse Solar, we install the perfect system for your family, and we stand behind our work. Ground rack, roof mount, or pole mount, let us design an energy-saving solar system just right for you. Talk with one of our helpful designers for your free estimate. Call 275-5600 or go to powerhousesolar.com.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today, or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Ever since we started Boomer Tech Radio, Advanced Automotive has been part of our program. But Tim and Cody Morlock are more than just our advertisers. They're our friends, and they are our first choice when we have our personal vehicles serviced. Why? Well, because after your home, your car is probably your second biggest investment, and it's vital that it be safe and dependable. Advanced Automotive has a skilled staff of certified technicians ready to diagnose your vehicle and get it running right. Advanced Automotive is listed on RepairPal.com, a national rating site where customers can leave reviews and even get an estimate on the cost of a repair. Go where the professionals take their vehicles to be serviced. Advanced Automotive in Reading, on the web at AdvancedAutoReading.com. Visit them at 5756 F Westside Road, just off Bonneview. Call them at 530-244-4423. Advanced Automotive. Welcome back to the Tech News. You can use Boomer Tech Radio if you want to get in touch with us. BoomerTechRadio@gmail.com. And, of course, you can write to Bob at KCNR1460.com here on our flagship station, KCNR in Reading. We are distributed all the way through the known universe on podcast platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Google Play Store, Stitcher, and, of course, TuneIn Radio, or you can go directly to the website, BoomerTechRadio.com, and download the show for about the past couple of years right from there. So lots of ways to pick up on the show. You want to make some comments, that is the place to do it, BoomerTechRadio@gmail.com. Continuing now with my son Alan on Skype, which has made life so much easier for radio broadcasters, because several times now we've made remote broadcasts, which used to take a big van full of equipment and big antennas and things like that. Now we call in either on a smartphone or a tablet or a laptop. We can carry a whole radio studio just in a suitcase, set it up, and be ready to rock and roll.
And you don't have the whole crackling phone, bad connection,
yes,
and all sorts of things.
Or on the radio link, you would get buzzes and interference, or a plane would fly through. All kinds
Dang
of
it, planes.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of planes, we watched some years ago, in fact, I think it's been almost a decade, since one of the first private spacecraft achieved the 60-mile mark and technically reached the edge of space. And then there was an accident, and the planes out of Mojave were grounded. Now Virgin Galactic getting ready to start up again. They fixed some of the problems, and they have made another successful launch of their space plane. How long before space tourism kicks off, Alan?
Still a number of years, but Virgin Galactic did complete its second test of its new plane. I'm trying to get the exact name right, but anyway, the Spaceship Two USS VSS Unity. It actually gets carried up into the sky by two other planes, and then they kind of let it go, and it flies its way up from there. It helps its aerodynamic.
Yeah, the White Knight or something like that.
Yeah, if it doesn't have to, you know, have wheels or anything like that.
Right.
Stays cost a lot, really, and it's worth just having two other planes pick it up. But anyway, it was released at an altitude of about 46,000 feet. It fired up its engines, went approximately Mach 2, and went up to an altitude of 84,000 feet. And then continued to climb up, eventually plateauing at 114,000 feet. Air Force's space starts at about 2,604 feet, so it's got a ways to go for that. But it's just making sure the general idea of it all still works.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just another step towards, you know, commercial space flights for people, which would be pretty darn cool.
Yes. Well, I understand that Elon Musk earlier this week called out Boeing, saying, we're going to drag race you to Mars, guys, and you know, we'll race you for pink slips to Mars, saying that Boeing needs to put their money where their mouth is with their claims that they have a Mars-ready vehicle. Musk, of course, our own version of Tony Stark, stepping up and saying that he's going to make it there first. So competition is good, and not necessarily having to wait on governments to figure out who's going to be the low bidder and then strap somebody in it. So,
yeah, I feel like we easily have the technology to go to Mars, but it's a little bit different than when we were sending people up to the moon in the freaking 60s, mm-hmm. in that, you know, people died trying to go to the moon.
Yep.
They did. I mean, it was the cutting edge of technology. It was extremely risky for everybody, well, everybody there involved, and their lives on the line. And these days, it's a lot more no tolerance for any sort of, like, risk or anything. So the fact that they need to – it's not necessarily a bad thing, but that they need to really be 100% sure, at least very, very sure that things are going to go the way they should – really definitely slows down the progress.
Exactly, exactly. On the other hand, we're not having to develop things from scratch. We're putting probes on Mars, basically built from off-the-shelf components. They practically picked up stuff at Best Buy to build the Mars rovers, you know.
Yeah, I mean, because technology is so cheap and so interchangeable for the most part. You can just build a Mars rover from Best Buy, pretty much. You might not get the rocket fuel, so you might have to get that somewhere
else. Yeah, well, I guess there's techniques going on that. So all this competition is definitely a healthy thing, and a public-private partnership in space exploration, because there's now a lot of competition. The Chinese are seriously working on getting their space program up to full speed. We laughed a few years ago, oh, they're still in the 60s. They are advancing very, very rapidly. Same for the Russians, who have continued to build relatively crude but pretty darn tough pieces of hardware that get the job done. India is actually working on a manned space flight program, of all things. So if we want to maintain a bit of an edge and not get left back in the dust, we as a country better get our act together.
Or at least let our private companies do it for us.
Exactly.
And now, one of the interesting things about all these other countries coming up into space is that we've been pretty dominant in, for the most part, is, you know, the somewhat recent thing that came out of Trump about establishing a space force is not really all that crazy. I mean, if there are bad actors in space, they're going to do bad things up there, you know? So figuring out ways to protect our stuff up there is not all that weird.
No, and that's been a discussion, especially in science fiction books, but there's been discussions about a aerospace force as an extension. And then, of course, the Navy wants in on that action, too. But there are bad actors, and there have been concerns about projectiles. Take, for example, taking out our GPS and communication system. GPS is the big one, or even just radio jamming GPS and causing a lot of problems.
So it wouldn't be hard for somebody to send something up there to really just sort of ping with little tiny pellets a bunch of our satellites up there to really screw over a lot of our infrastructure that we rely heavily on.
Exactly. So we're going to keep an eye on that. But you know, I was like 13 when Armstrong put the footprint on the moon, and I'm sorry, there's those who say that didn't really happen, it was all a soundstage out in the Mojave, and I say baloney.
Well, get a really good telescope, and you can see it yourself.
Okay? Exactly, okay. Exactly. the final frontier, some people call the Internet, and folks in us, we talked about it, Amazon earlier. Apparently, Amazon is not making it down under at the moment due to some new tax laws.
Well, they do have their own Australian site. Amazon.au, I think, for Australia. But in response to a 10% goods and service tax that was recently applied for everything less than $1,000, Australian money, beginning July 1st, Amazon is actually going to start IP range blocking. That means everybody from the continent, or at least everybody that's using the appropriate internet protocol, is going to start blocking them from using the main Amazon site. Simply because them having to collect that kind of tax and send it over to the Australian government is going to be such a giant pain for them that it's just not worth, like, even letting users do it and then maybe reporting it, maybe not. And they don't want to get in trouble with the Australian government, so they're just not even allowing users to buy things from the main site down there, forcing them to use the particular Aussie site.
This is one of these things that will probably get worked out. Agreements have to be signed, and new tariffs have to be assigned. A lot of states are there's a lot of push here in the U.S. for a universal online tax. Rather than the piecemeal taxes that run back and forth, in some states you don't get charged tax, in other states you do, and it's a mess online. And there is a push for a federal online tax. Now, as long as that money goes to the particular state where you've made your purchase, that would be a good thing. But if the Fed snap it up and there's no, and then you get a state sales tax on top of it, that's going to cripple commerce.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be, if anything's implemented, it'll be the model of efficiency going through the federal government.
We say with only a trace of cynicism. Oh, my goodness. Now, a couple of years ago, when Brenda and I went down to CES in Las Vegas, the big toy was one of the first fabricated, they called it the, what was the Star Trek word for it?
Replicator?
Replicator, yes. That was the brand name of the 3D printer, was the Replicator. And the whole idea, of course, of a 3D printer is that once you've made your file, you can make the widget over and over again, and you start with a tank of stuff or a block of stuff, which you melt.
Resin. Yeah.
Resin. And make it into the new shape instead of taking a block of stuff and carving away all the parts that you don't want and ending up with a big pile of waste. So 3D printing, I noted there's a series on Netflix. It's a reboot of Lost in Space. The science is pretty bad, but 3D printing, yeah, Brenda and I both being very technical and fairly scientific-minded people, we groan a lot. It's a credible reboot, except that the robot's actually an alien, Dr. Smith has had a gender change, you know.
Just for fun, I guess.
Well, they wanted to stir things up a little bit. The mom is the smart one, and dad's just kind of a boob in the family, you know. So
hey, wow, that's a new and unexplored idea in modern television.
Right. Surprisingly, it's watchable, but one of the technologies that is featured heavily in the series is 3D printing. Now, presumably, it's going to get better. It looks like a commercial 3D printer that they have on the set. And everybody's using pretty standard smartphones and tablets, and I'm going to assume that technology gets a lot better. It's something that didn't even exist a decade ago, so I'm going to assume that in the 50 or 100 years in the future that this is supposedly set, the stuff is going to get a lot better. Anyway,
that far in the future, you probably won't even need to have a physical device. You'll just, like, think about what you want to happen.
Yeah,
happen.
Right.
I mean, but it's a little hard to portray that on screen, so I'll forgive them for that.
Right. So 3D printing has started out with plastic resin. Now there are metal composites and ceramic composites that can now be done with 3D printing. And now organic materials.
How about stem cell goo?
Yep, stem cell goo, which when you've got that, you can make any number of things, including giving people back their sight.
So, yeah, the researchers at Newcastle University have been successfully able to print a 3D print cornea using a new gel formulation that keeps the stem cells alive, and it produces a material that's stiff enough to hold its shape, but it's soft enough to be squeezed out of the nozzle of a 3D printer when it comes out of it. And there would be a heck of a lot of use for brand new corneas for people, because really the only way you got one before is from some eyeball that wasn't being used anymore.
Right. That's the thing on the back of your driver's license. And
a little pink sticker, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a very narrow window that the tissue has to be harvested, like, within 4 hours of death, or it's absolutely useless. So a lot of, even though people have the sticker, and I also didn't know that if a person is in, say, in a coma for an extended period of time, the tissues are no longer usable. So even though we've got all these people on these tissue, organ donor programs, only a fraction of them actually get to the end user. So if we can start doing things like heart valves and corneas and other tissues generated on demand, fresh, and of a neutral tissue, so you're not worried about rejection, we've entered a whole new realm of science.
Right, and plus, you know, oftentimes if anybody got a new cornea, they'd have to, well, shave them to make sure it's the right shape for your eyeball. And this one can be, well, printed to be exactly right for you and even be vision correcting while they're at it.
I was talking to, now I had earlier this year, and it was quite an experience, I had cataract surgery and I had new lenses inserted into my eyes, which was really interesting because all of a sudden my colors came back. I didn't know that the lenses that I grew up with had, well, with age, they get kind
of... they get the cataracts, it starts interfering with the light, and so, yeah, right. It would...
And they actually yellow. Yeah. You lose your color perception because the tissue is turning yellow. So the first thing I noticed when I took the bandages off was everything was really blue. That's backed off a little bit because my brain is now interpreting the signals a little more correctly.
It's adjusting, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you think when the bandages came off, oh, you screwed up everybody?
Exactly. No,
you
I just have to
somewhere.
Settle into it. So what he was talking about, and the same thing with dentistry, right now we don't have the materials that are strong enough or safe enough to be able to 3D print teeth. We still take a chunk of material and carve it down to the right dimensions. But the day is not far off when we can precisely measure the piece that we need to put in there and 3D print it on demand. We are very, very close to that technology, and being able to 3D print a lens custom on the spot rather than try to make a, if somebody has a unique eye shape, trying to come up with something that'll fit in there, it's really going to enable a lot of people to regain their sight. And that's some pretty exciting stuff.
Right. Just 3D printing and being able to manufacture body parts in general is crazy useful for a host of different things.
Mm-hmm. Yes, all these things can be misused, but... It's a new, I suppose that anesthetics could be misused, you know.
Right, yeah, anything can be, really, but just think of the positives, think positive.
There you go. Uganda, which has never in its history been known as a foundation of democracy.
Not really a bastion of freedom.
No. When I was in the United States Navy, that was when a gentleman, using the term loosely, by the name of Idi Amin, was the tight-fisted dictator of Uganda, and he was not a very nice man, to put it mildly. He was finally deposed, but stories about the stuff he got away with and his secret police and all that were pretty legendary. In fact, the carrier group I was with, Mr. Amin had seized like a group of Americans and was holding them to force the United States to talks, and the Navy was gearing up to go in there and come knocking on his door. It was a little tense situation. Anyway, the point being that Uganda has never known the freedoms that we take for granted every day. People can hop on Facebook, those who are still on it, or Twitter or Instagram or whatever, and say all kinds of nasty things about Republicans, about Democrats, about people with blonde hair, you name it, you are free to express your opinion. Might not agree with your opinion, but by golly, you are free to express it under our United States Constitution. And not all countries enjoy those freedoms, particularly like China, but Uganda has come up with a way that some are saying is going to stifle free speech.
They've actually implemented a tax on using online applications like WhatsApp or Facebook. And it doesn't seem like much. It equates to about 5 cents a day, every day you use any of these devices, and you supposedly wouldn't get charged if you didn't use the devices that or that particular application that day. But as not surprising, a lot of people are saying this is just an attempt to try to stifle free speech. And some officials in the government of Uganda have said those applications are pretty much only used for gossiping.
Right,
that's
right.
A little dismissive, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that the bill would also come with a 1% tax for all money, mobile money transactions, which, with the somewhat weaker economy that Uganda has, that a lot of people use online transactions, mobile money, to actually pay for almost all of their regular things. So I mean, that's just a cash grab.
Yeah, it is.
But the taxing people for using online service, online chat features, that feels an awful lot like trying to stifle people from talking to one another.
Right, and of course, monitoring those transactions. Now, that's nothing unique to Uganda. Of course, China doesn't allow most of our U.S.-based text messaging. They have their own version, which are heavily followed by the security services. And you'll recall that during the Arab Spring, Egypt, I believe it was, tried to shut down all social media because that's how people were planning demonstrations.
Right, trying to be, somewhat active in their political, well, they don't really have rights there, unfortunately, but they'd like to, and so that's why they were using it to try to make their own demonstrations, they were saying.
Finally, I'm going to brag on just a little bit about, As I have mentioned previously, my computer, either the main board or the CPU, blew, and I couldn't tell which it was, central processing unit, which is the main processor. And this computer is about 3 years, I bought it about 3 years old as a custom build from a company called CyberPower. The good thing was that I was able to reuse the case, and I upgraded the power supply, put in a new motherboard, got a new processor. There's a company that I found that actually married the processor to the board and put the cooling, the heat pipe cooler on it and tested it and then sent it to me, and then I added the memory. The point being, I'm fairly knowledgeable, but this is something that anybody who's handy with a screwdriver can do, is upgrade your old PC. And again, there are things that only a PC can do that you can't do on a tablet or laptop. So if I was able to pull this off, most people who are even remotely handy with hand tools can either upgrade or, in fact, build your own PC from scratch, because it's a learning experience.
I try to convince people that building a computer is pretty easy if you, have someone that knows a little bit about something actually, pick some parts for you. Because if it goes, if it fits somewhere without, cramming it, that's where it goes.
Exactly. It's pretty standardized as far as form factors and things like that. Plenty of information out there on the Internet on how to build your own PC. You may not save a lot of money, but you'll certainly gain a lot of insight into what makes it tick.
You're a lot more like, this is what I want. I want this and this and this.
Exactly.
And this. You're able to pick exactly what you want out of it.
All the time for this hour. Hey, Alan, thank you very much for joining me for this first hour of Boomer Tech Radio. We'll be back after the news at the top of the hour, and Brenda will be joining me in studio. Boomer Tech Radio with Bob and Brenda.
It's a given that your car or light truck is going to need service sooner or later, and often waiting until later means a lot bigger repair bill. Now, there are many repair shops in town, so it pays to do your research and find out where your friends and neighbors take their vehicles and check reviews online as well. Advanced Automotive of Reading is listed on RepairPal.com, where customers just like you talk about their experience. Advanced Auto has been making quality auto care easy since 1993 and has a philosophy of keeping things simple. Stop by their shop at 5756 F West Side Road just off Bonneview. You'll see vehicles from local businesses and first responders in the yard because those customers rely on cars and trucks that are safe and reliable. But more than that, safe vehicles mean a safer community. And honestly, it's the right way to do business. Check them out for yourself. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Reading, 244-4423.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, community talk radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Reading.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra. Game back on again. President Trump says the planned summit with North Korea's Kim Jong-un is back in play after meeting with a high-level official at the White House yesterday. Bob McGinnis, a retired U.S. Army lieutenant colonel and SRN News military affairs analyst, says Kim may be getting pressure from China.
Kim Jong-un wants to walk away with something, given that he's been counseled twice by President Xi Jinping of China.
The scheduled summit for June 12th in Singapore. A wildfire threatening a village in northern New Mexico, about 3 miles west of Cimarron, doubled in size to over 42 square miles, as about 450 firefighters are trying to protect nearly 300 homes in the Philmont Boy Scout camp, where over a dozen outbuildings have already been destroyed. The cause of that fire, that's about 138 miles northeast of Albuquerque, is under investigation. Ahead of the annual Celebrate Israel parade in New York City tomorrow, Big Apple police say they're not taking any chances.
Police in New York say there are no specific or credible threats against the city or the Celebrate Israel parade, but they will have stepped-up security that includes more than 1,000 cops, bomb-sniffing dogs, sharpshooters on roofs, radiation detection devices, and something that has become the norm now, sanitation trucks filled with sand that block streets to prevent vehicle attacks. NYPD Chief of Patrol Rodney Harrison.
Given the current threat level in Israel and the Middle East as well, and as elsewhere in the world, we are not taking any chances.
Police also say they're bracing for anti-Israel demonstrations. The parade celebrates the 70th anniversary of the founding of Israel. Julie Walker, New York.
And you can get more news and read more analysis at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
Want to change how you feel significantly? ReliefFactor.com will do that for you. Support for temporary relief of minor aches and pains. You're out there exercising, you go a little bit too far, as I did on Saturday, you definitely need Relief Factor on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Actually, I take it every day, as do tens of thousands of people. They know that they should have Omega, which is fish oil, resveratrol, which you can get from drinking red wine, but you don't know how much. I carry and curcumin all together, carefully calibrated, perfectly formulated, the combination of four natural supplements that everyone agrees you ought to be taking every single day. This makes it easy to do in the amount that is appropriate for your body. The starter pack is $19.95. You try it for 3 weeks. Put everything else away that your doctor says you can put away. Don't not take what he tells you to take. And then see if you don't feel terrific. You'll feel much better. ReliefFactor.com works. Tens of thousands of people say so. Their testimonials are abundant and real and sincere. Go and watch them and get ReliefFactor.com.
The tainted lettuce outbreak is... killed now five people.
Health officials have tied the E. coli outbreak to romaine lettuce grown in Yuma, Arizona. The growing season there ended 6 weeks ago, and it's unlikely any tainted lettuce is still in stores or people's homes, given its short shelf life.
Correspondent Dennis Crowley adds previously one death had been reported in California. Now health officials say they've learned of four more, one in Arizona, one in New York, and two in Minnesota. An anonymous bidder offered more than $3.3 million yesterday for a private lunch with Warren Buffett, an amount just short of the record paid in 2016 and 2012 for a chance to pick the brain of the renowned investor and philanthropist. The online auction raises money for the Glide Foundation. More on these stories at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra. It'll be the Pentagon now that it will do security clearance checks for the federal government.
With a backlog of about 700,000 background investigations for the federal government and a list of high-profile mistakes and missteps, the Defense Department will be taking over responsibility for vetting individuals for security clearances. An official speaking on condition of anonymity tells the Associated Press the White House will be making the decision soon. Currently, the Office of Personnel Management handles background checks, but defense legislation for 2017 had already directed the Pentagon to take over background investigations for all military and civilian employees and contractors. Mike Gracia, Washington.
A conservative group taking aim at the nation's oldest statewide sanctuary law with a drive to repeal a 31-year-old Oregon mandate limiting police coordination on immigration arrests. Critics say hate groups are funding the effort to abolish that law. More news and analysis at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
It might be the car or light truck that gets you to your job every day. Maybe your child drives it to school. Or perhaps your drivers deliver goods to the customers who keep your business going. The bottom line is, you rely heavily on that vehicle to be safe and reliable day after day, and that means regular maintenance by professionals trained in the latest automotive repair techniques. For Brenda and myself, that means Advanced Automotive is the only repair shop we trust with our personal vehicles. Advanced Automotive does everything they can to make car care easy. Founded in 1993 by Tim Morlock and now owned by his son Cody, carrying on a tradition of honest work at a fair price. Find out for yourself by visiting AdvancedAutoReading.com or go to RepairPal.com, or you could just call 530-244-4423. It's a great little repair shop that's a bit hard to find, but worth the effort. At 5756 F West Side Road in Reading. Advanced Automotive.
Well, hello once again. Boomer Tech Radio is the name of the show. The name of your host is Bob Belongi, along with...
Brenda Belongi.
And welcome back to Goodies, Gadgets, and Gizmos. We are live. Well, of course, if you're listening to the podcast that you've downloaded, not quite as live.
Or the archive copy at KCNR1460.com. Yeah.
But if you are listening on KCNR, we are here. The first hour was pre-recorded because my son Alan has... there's something he does with his gamer friends, every Saturday. So we recorded him up yesterday. Well, Brenda was out and about, but she's here. And... we're going to lead off with something really interesting. Now, I have a confession to make. Back during the 1980s, I voiced robocalls. And back then, robocalls were accomplished mostly with fancified cassette players. One cassette would play the message. It would have a computer like an old IBM PC or even an Apple II, if you can imagine that. Dialing the list of numbers, the person would connect, and the tape would start playing, hello, I've got an important message. And then it would pause, and a second tape would start recording the response, most of which was...
Blow away.
Exactly. But that was early automated telemarketing. And I... freely confess that I made a pretty fair income, not doing the marketing, but building the bomb. It was up to somebody else to drop it.
Oh, yeah, you did the voiceover. You were hired for that part. You weren't the source of the annoyance. You were merely the voice of the annoyance.
I was merely the voice of the annoyance. I was just following orders.
You held out on me in this story. That was something I did not know. I do know that you were the voice of the San Diego airport. You know, do not leave
your white zone is for, message, yeah. The white zone, the red zone deal.
Unattended luggage.
Early on when I started doing that, yeah, for a few years, my voice graced the flight areas the passenger areas
and
at San Diego International.
Ironically, I was through San Diego Airport at a time when that probably was your voice I was listening to. I was waiting for friends to come in on another flight. And so I had a few hours to kill, and that got to be annoying after a while because they play it so frequently, which is understandable.
It's a short message, and it repeats frequently. You know, do not leave your baggage in the company of somebody you do not
right.
know.
I suspect yeah. that was your vote.
Well, this was after Lockerbie. Was all these rules changed,
mm-hmm.
and including the part about do not leave your luggage with somebody you don't know, because that's how they got the bomb onto the Pan Am flight. Was somebody said, hey, I need you to, will you please deliver this to my cousin? And, of course, it was a bomb that brought the aircraft down. So they changed a lot of rules, including these announcements. Anyway, we have grown to just despise when the phone rings during certain hours. Most people have their answering machines up.
Well, the caller ID is the trick there. And it doesn't matter. Now they call any time of day.
And then there's workarounds for caller ID. They cleverly insert a local phone number when you look. So it's a 530 number. And you, a lot of people simply, if you don't know that number, you just ignore it, especially on my cell phone. If I don't recognize the number, it goes into voicemail. I don't care who it is. However, for those of us who do pick up the phone, because we might be expecting a call or perhaps we're in a state of business, we talked a few weeks ago about how artificial intelligence and advances in voice technology, voice response technology, are improving so much that we are getting close to systems that can that are outright fooling you, case in point.
Right. So you had mentioned to me that you'd gotten a robocall, as we call them, from some... It's one of the peace officer organizations
or something like that,
where they're seeking, and this is, it used to get a live caller, you know, a real person on there.
You'd hear all the background noise.
Yeah. So this is not a new organization, but their tactics are very interesting. And what we found very interesting about these calls was the sophistication of the AI that was in there. So you had warned me about this, that there was, in your experience, what did the person say?
It listens for you, say, who is this or what's this or whatever, and the voice will say, well, I'm a real person, but because of the technology I'm using, I can only go by the script.
Ding, 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 ding. There goes the bell. So you had told me about this, and I get the call, and I answered it because I was curious as to, you know, sometimes I answer the ones I don't know, and sometimes I don't. So this one was great.
And Google has put out with their new some of their new software that the system is so responsive, you could believe that you are talking to an actual person at the other end.
Right, except for there was something that just wasn't quite right about it.
The uncanny valley. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a there's a guy that's written a book, the title of which is Blink. Gladwell, something like that. I can look that up real quick. But Malcolm Gladwell. It's just when you look at something and you just know it's not right.
Yeah.
So the same thing is when you hear it, something's just not right here. So in my experience was they called and asked for you, not by last name, merely by first name. And I'm like, okay, this is, you know, whatever. I said, I'm sure that, you know, is this Robert? No, but I'm sure that I can speak for him. And then the AI says, well, okay, you can probably help me. Mm-hmm. And so it launches into something. And as soon as he said the peace officers, whatever, I started laughing because this is a repeat thing, obviously.
This is some pretty sophisticated
stuff.
It
was very sophisticated. I said, okay, is this a live person or is this a robocall? quite a pause, and then it says, oh, I'm a live person, but due to technical whatever restrictions, I have to read off a script, and proceeds to go on with, I don't even know what the verbiage was because I was laughing too hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I started laughing, and I said, you're not a real person, blah, 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 and the person's still talking.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a recording, it's a gotcha type of thing. And then there's this, apparently I was supposed to answer a question or something like that, and I was done talking, and there was this pause, and then there's a hello on the caller end, right? And I said, yeah, I'm still here. I said, you're not a live person. Anyway, I suspect what was going on is that the AI was so sophisticated that it was able to interpret what I was saying and said, okay, goodbye. And it just hung up on me.
Yeah.
that it obviously knew it wasn't going to get anywhere with it. So it didn't even say, oh, well, okay, have a great day anyway. I mean, they didn't even do that.
Yeah.
But momentarily, you are fooled. And based on what you say, it's quite obvious that it will select from a number of responses. Mm-hmm. The mistake the system made was in the length of time that it took for the AI to reply.
Correct.
And you go, people don't wait that long.
Now, reservation systems, especially, can benefit from this technology. There was talk about passing a law that if it was an automated system, it had to put a disclaimer in the, at the front, so that only a real person would sit there and let you abuse them.
Oh, dear.
But it's interesting that that is how far we've come. But voice activated systems, for example, we picked up at, we talked about this, Costco, a couple of what are called Wemo plugs, not to be confused with Wemo, the Chinese chat agency. They're little, they're made by Belkin, and they look like just a little outlet extender.
Mm.
Now, we've had a timer on our lamp to bring it on and off at certain times.
Right.
And those things are a real pain in the butt. You know, you get the mechanical ones that invariably fail, and they make a lot of noise. The electronic ones, well, as the seasons shift, of course, the light's coming on at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. There's still 3 hours of daylight left.
Right.
These little Wemo plugs, and you can get two of them for like $39. Or something like, as I recall, it was about $39 for a package of two, and they came in that Costco package.
Oh, that's from infamous. Hell! Yeah. Yes.
One thing I noticed
it
about
this, it
takes
a jackhammer to get into a plastic.
This package though had like zippers on it where you could tear open the back end and get to the product
nice.
Without killing yourself. Because there's been people injured.
Yeah, I'm using a knife to get into those plastic containers.
And I understand the security thing.
Yeah, well, plastic is supposed to be recyclable, but not all recycle systems take it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the Wemo plug, you plug it, you hook it into your internet of, you know, to your network. And by the way, did you unplug your router and then plug it back in? We've done ours. In fact, I think I have to do one here. It finds your system, and then you get an app, and you connect it to your internet, and you connect your app to it, and then you can set rules for it to turn on and off at various times. You can set it so that it tracks celestial time, in other words, local sunrise and sunset. I forget there's a special term for that. But you can also tie it into your Google Home or your Amazon Echo. Now, we're going to try it. Now, we've got it hooked up to the Echo right now, and it's interesting that it's a little picky on its syntax.
Absolutely. If the timer's turned it on, you can't tell the system to turn it off. You have to tell the system to turn it on, it's already on, and then tell the system to turn it off, and then it will turn it off. It doesn't seem to have a very good connection with the programming.
The status, yeah.
Yeah, with a sense of its status or with automatic programming.
However, it is nice to be able to go light on, you know, living room on. Now, it will recognize, you know, the word living room or bedroom or outside. But we're going to try, and that's on
Once
Echo.
Once you specify,
yeah.
though, you I mean it.
But I just typed in living room and,
right.
it, and it read it.
Right.
It'll be interesting. We're going to hook up one, and it came in a two-pack, like I said. We're going to hook up a second one in the bedroom where we have a Google Home and see if that works any better. I'm seeing that, you know, while the Echo was first out of the box with smart speakers and they really took the market by storm, the Google actually seems to understand complicated syntax better.
Much better, yep.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
And I don't see as many weird things happening. Our Echo constantly flashes blue during TV programs. Now, we never got the cackling, mysterious, creepy laugh.
Well, to be fair, the Echo's right next to the television. So.
Yeah, so it picks up occasionally.
Yeah, it hears all kinds of stuff.
The one in the bedroom usually just sits there. We've got a and she sounds a little snarky when we ask her, you know, make sure the alarm is running.
Way too cheerful. Not snarky. She's way too cheerful. All right, actually, you got it. Or, well, there is that one. Actually, you already have an alarm set, you dummy. You know, it's kind of, they leave that part out. I think the programmers had a little too much fun for it, but with it. But if you say, you know, set an alarm for 6:30 tomorrow morning, okay, you got it. It's done.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to bed. I don't need cheerful. You know, it just was, it just kind of cracks you up. It's
now,
a bit amusing.
There's folks who say, no way will I have a microphone that the government can monitor sitting in my house. Okay, I don't personally believe that I'm nearly interesting enough for any monitoring service to pay much attention to.
Not going to hear much on ours.
Yeah, exactly.
Except, you know, everyday conversation or a lot of nothing.
Yeah, or talking to the cat.
Well, there's that. Yelling at the cat is probably more like it. But even so, yeah, it's interesting. But the AI that was in that robocall was just so interesting because it was like the next evolution. It was a version on steroids is what it felt like. It was kind of interesting. But even so, at some point with the whole admission of, it's like, right, I'm a live person, but due to technical, you know, restrictions or whatever, I'm forced to use a script. Hello.
And
you try to interrupt them, and a real human would be interrupted and would stop talking or whatever, but this just kept on going. So
which
it was really interesting.
As Obi-Wan Kenobi said, from a certain point of view is the truth, because it's obviously a voice actor.
Right.
Who did the voicing. So,
yes.
In fact, there is a live person
right.
in that equation.
Right.
It, you know, and the technology means he can only give you the pre-recorded responses. So, yes, it's Memorex. It's not live. So.
That's what I thought of later, that I should have said, oh, are you Memorex or are you live? And the AI is probably looking for keywords. It doesn't really digest the entire syntax of what you're saying. But it will pick out key words.
Well, like when you call the bank.
Yeah.
And you sit there and you just keep saying, agent, 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 agent.
Yeah.
It's working your way through.
And finally,
it used to push zero all the time.
Exactly. Oh, okay, you want to speak to a customer agent. Yes. You know, and you go, that's what I've been trying to tell you. And then you realize that was stupid because
you're arguing with a
computer.
Software.
Exactly. That really doesn't care.
Yeah, really.
You know, it's pretty funny.
It doesn't get happy. It doesn't get sad. It just runs programs.
You know.
Reference there to Short Circuit.
Yeah.
Just, great movie if you've never seen it, by the way.
Oh, it's delightful.
By the way, if you want to follow some of the stories that we track here on Boomer Tech Radio, you can go to the Flipboard app. Great. It works pretty good on tablets. The PC version doesn't work as well, in my opinion, but it's a great tablet application. I've got it on my iPad. Brenda has it on her Galaxy. And we track stories and we reference them during the show. And if you want to follow along, go to the Flipboard app. Add Boomer Tech Radio Magazine, and you can make comments on some of the stories that we have added. Now, these have been written by other folks, and we attribute when we can. Mashable, we frequently reference on here. Interesting article on Mashable. For the last couple of years, now, I've got a 2012 vintage MacBook Pro.
Right.
Which has been doing pretty darn good.
First time I saw a lighted keyboard, I love that.
Yeah. And it's actually a pretty robust, for being a five-year-old machine, it's pretty robust. And it's still doing me well. I replaced the original hard drive because the boot time on the thing was, a good 5 or 6 minutes from a cold start. Before everything would load up. So I replaced the original drive with what's called a solid-state drive. By the way, my new bragging computer uses a solid-state drive. And if you're somebody who likes to tinker around, that's one of the neat things you can do to your PC to really speed things up is replace your spinning drive with a solid-state drive. I boot up Windows in about 20 seconds. My MacBook comes up to OS X, or excuse me, Mac OS. I have to use the right terminology.
Yeah.
I'm up in less than a minute instead of sitting there watching the little doohickey go round and round and round and round. But then I expanded the memory. My 2012 was one of the last ones you could actually field expand the memory and get into and replace the battery.
Yep. That has its advantages.
The new MacBook's battery's glued in like a big tablet.
Yeah. So if you need it fixed, you have to send it to a repair facility?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the big complaints about the new generation of MacBooks is they went to a different style of key, on the keyboard, and they get full of crud and they jam up.
Oh.
Because they're so thin.
I thought they fixed that problem.
Well, there's been lawsuits over it. But what is being proposed by these folks at Mashable, you know how you can call up a keyboard on your tablet, mm-hmm. which, of course, eats all your real estate. Well, the proposal for Mac is to actually use an LCD screen in place of the keyboard, so it can be a trackpad, it can be a keyboard,
cool.
it can be joysticks.
Or a second display.
It's similar to the touch bar.
Yeah.
Basically making the touch bar all the way down to the trackpad. And to make it even more effective, put a little bit of haptic feedback. So when you're typing, just as mm-hmm. some tablets do, you get that little buzz
mm-hmm.
feel
mm-hmm.
That you've made contact with a key.
So this isn't something Apple says they're going to do. This
well,
was a suggestion.
Well, they filed a patent to that effect a few years ago. So Apple watchers are wondering. Now, we won't know. And it's unlikely that the developers conference, the Worldwide Developers Conference, will reveal a new generation of MacBooks. So we don't know. The line is due for a major update. Not much has happened to the MacBook Pro in the last couple of years. It's been a pretty static design.
That's
kind of like
really
the Lenovo
idea.
Because it has it works. But taking the MacBook and turning the keyboard into something that can change. The other thing is, let's suppose somebody in another country buys it and they want a Hungarian keyboard or a Russian keyboard
Chinese, Japanese,
all
whatever.
All you do is reprogram it.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, in the setup, what's the language type of thing? That's actually a really good idea.
Yeah.
You could also have a customizable area maybe on the keyboard where you have some hot function keys that you could program or something like that with macros. There would be all kinds of possibilities with that. Or touchscreen things that you have to do differently, like a save button or something like that that's just on a keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting things. You know, you have to watch some touchscreens because if you just barely brush whatever it is, it will key on that, take you to a new website or something like that. But if things with the haptic feedback and so on and so forth, designing it for pressure or what have you, whatever, would then allow that to happen. So that's actually a pretty good idea.
Yeah, most touch keyboards are actually capacitive, but the new, of course, the iPhone uses the technology that registers the amount of pressure you're using. When you hit, so the light press does one thing and a heavy press does another.
Well, the physical keys, too, they call them chiclets mm-hmm. after the gum.
Yeah.
Chiclet gum. The cat has been known to get interested in the keyboard and peel off a couple buttons. I have an older laptop that's like that, and it's missing two buttons.
A couple of keycaps.
Fortunately, Fortunately, it's not detrimental to the operation, and you just have to make do with that. They're not oft-used keys, but still, the lack of physical keys in that capacity is something that doesn't wear out. Or if you spill something on the computer, your water or tea or coffee or, God forbid, a soda, something like that. You don't have the sticky mess or the wet mess to deal with. It really just would,
mm-hmm.
run off. And hopefully it doesn't affect the rest of the device, but that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Of course, we have talked before about how using your computer and then going straight to bed, or using your smartphone or your tablet and going straight to bed, can disrupt your sleep. And there's a number of reasons. First of all, the blue light can tell your brain that it's still daylight and you need to be awake to be able to outrun the saber-toothed tigers and whatever. So the recommendation is that you give yourself at least 30 minutes of downtime between the last viewing of that blue light and actually laying down to sleep to give yourself time to disengage.
I've seen as little as 15, so 15 to 30 minutes with that. And so I think it depends on the study that you read, but certainly 30 minutes has been the top end of that duration that I've read about.
Yeah. Now, there's a night mode available on a lot of devices, and you may try engaging that. But just as people should not be watching TV and then go straight to bed or have a TV in the bedroom, it's a good idea to disengage. Reading books doesn't seem to have quite as much detrimental effect. And like I said, it's a combination of the blue light and the extra stimulation.
Yeah, I suppose if the you were reading with an LED light that was pretty blue, maybe there would be some things with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, reading
possible.
A book or something like
yeah,
that.
Possible.
But who knows?
Wilbur Tech Radio continues after these messages.
Ever since we started Boomer Tech Radio, Advanced Automotive has been part of our program. But Tim and Cody Morlock are more than just our advertisers. They're our friends, and they are our first choice when we have our personal vehicles serviced. Why? Well, because after your home, your car is probably your second biggest investment, and it's vital that it be safe and dependable. Advanced Automotive has a skilled staff of certified technicians ready to diagnose your vehicle and get it running right. Advanced Automotive is listed on RepairPal.com, a national rating site where customers can leave reviews and even get an estimate on the cost of a repair. Go where the professionals take their vehicles to be serviced. Advanced Automotive in Reading. On the web at advancedautoreading.com. Visit them at 5756 F Westside Road, just off Bonneview. Call them at 530-244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
I'm here with Mike of Estate Grant and Things. Hey, Mike, so I gotta ask, what's with the and things?
And things is anything that we can make with granite and metal.
So you're saying it's gonna last?
It's forever furniture.
Wow, did you come up with that one?
Absolutely. The and things are dining room tables, wine bistros, fire pit patio tables, and our ever-popular granite line roasters. Really, anything you can imagine inside or out.
You know, that store-bought stuff has to be replaced every few years. You know, it gets hot up here.
That's why we call it forever furniture. You can will it to your children.
Mike, with Estate Granite and Things, our builder of choice, thinking completely out of the box.
The first time I walked into my new kitchen, I was amazed, but after, I started to notice all the little things that make my kitchen unique. From the tile backsplash to the seams in the granite, everything was truly a work of art.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite and Things. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard. Estate Granite and Things, completely out of the box. Or visit us at estategranite.com.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information. May is First Responder Month, and KCNR 1460 joins with our community in a salute to law enforcement, fire, and medical personnel.
I would like to take this opportunity to thank our first responders in Shasta and Tehama County for all you do. You have one of the most challenging jobs in the world. Joe Rodola from Joe Rodola's Debt Consulting thanks you for helping save lives and protecting our property.
To those who run toward danger when the alarm sounds, a heartfelt thank you from your community and Free Fire Media. It's a given that your car or light truck is going to need service sooner or later, and often, waiting until later means a lot bigger repair bill. Now, there are many repair shops in town, so it pays to do your research and find out where your friends and neighbors take their vehicles and check reviews online as well. Advanced Automotive of Reading is listed on RepairPal.com, where customers just like you talk about their experience. Advanced Auto has been making quality auto care easy since 1993 and has a philosophy of keeping things simple. Stop by their shop at 5756 F West Side Road just off Bonneview. You'll see vehicles from local businesses and first responders in the yard because those customers rely on cars and trucks that are safe and reliable. But more than that, safe vehicles mean a safer community. And honestly, it's the right way to do business. Check them out for yourself. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Reading, 244-4423.
Welcome back for one more episode of Boomer Tech Radio.
One more segment.
Yeah, one more segment. Yeah, we're halfway through the episode. By the way, the catchy theme tune, and that's 8-Bit Junkie. Sounds a little bit like an Atari theme. Composed and performed by George Wood. It is being used by permission via the PodSafe Music Network. And I have an email from George somewhere saying, yeah, sure, use it for your show.
I have it on file.
You do. By the way, I do some video production for folks. And a few years ago, I posted a dance video from the local fundraising Dancing with the Stars. Well, the video has vanished, and my theory is I didn't take it down, so I'm pretty sure it was a DMCA takedown, Digital Millennium Copyright Act, because YouTube will pull stuff that has copyrighted music on it if the copyright holder has a blanket request that all non-authorized uses of their music be removed from YouTube. And so, and I don't even remember what the music track was, but that's my suspicion, is that it was a DMCA takedown. Which is the copyright holder's
privilege.
Absolute privilege.
Yep, that's okay.
Unless you want to pay those license fees. We talked a little bit about tablets and going to sleep, and we were going to announce this really smoking deal on a Samsung Galaxy Tab A. Now, Brenda has the 10-inch version of the Tab A. There are several different iterations of the Galaxy tablet. Brenda has a Tab A, which is sort of towards the low end in terms of capability and power, but you're getting,
I'm very happy with it. Yeah. Absolutely. For what I do, it's perfect.
Yeah.
It's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. An 8-inch Tab A retails for about $200. It was offered earlier on Amazon for $50 off. But just keep watching, because it will likely again go on sale. It all depends on availability and overstock and what's coming down the pipe. I've got an 8-inch Tab E, which is like pretty close to the bottom of the Samsung food chain in terms of tablets. But same thing. I use it mostly as a reader. I can pop online with it. And
most importantly, it fits into the cargo pocket on your britches.
Absolutely. Now, I get asked quite a bit. We both get asked, I want a tablet. What should I get? And the answer, of course, is, well, what do you plan on doing with it? If you're mostly going to read books, watch some movie content, and maybe send the occasional email, I can't recommend the Kindle Fire enough.
It's, what, $50 now or something like that?
Yeah, and or a 10-inch Kindle Fire is about $79
or something like that. And if you lose it, you know, if everything's on the cloud-based, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
Device-wise, so.
But our Kindles are still are, they're not exactly new. We've got them, about
five or six years ago. Yeah.
And we used it most recently at an event where we wanted to put the older version of the Kindles had an HDMI port on them.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to project a movie. It was Captain Ron, by the way. If you like movies about boats and you've never seen Captain Ron, you can get it.
It's great.
You can rent it off of Amazon. And nice thing about the Kindle is it'll store a movie and you can watch it offline when you can't get internet.
I will tell you about the Captain Ron movie, though. It's entertaining, but if you're a boater, it's even more entertaining.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
A knowledgeable boater, it's hysterical.
Obviously, whoever they consulted with knew their way around because they used the right terminology.
And just the scenes that they set up, a boater's going to go, no, that's not going to work.
It's
just great.
It's a fun film.
Anyway.
Not Ron Howard. Who am I thinking of? The actor.
I don't know.
I love these
things. I'm terrible with these things. Now you're going to make me go look it up.
used to be the Disney fresh face kid. Escape from New York. God, his name is right on the tip of my tongue. Don't you hate it when that happens? It means I'm getting dementia. So technology is able to help you with showing promise.
It's on assistant Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell, thank you. So if this is the early onset of dementia, you heard it here first. Tablets and other devices are making it easier for people who are aging to live independently.
Right. So some of those things can include controls for lights in a house, for instance, or even door locks. If you have mobility problems or memory problems, it may be something like a reminder to take your meds or who knows.
By the way, that was a caller saying that. Yeah, it was Kurt Russell. And I just... You ever try to really hard to think of a name, and it just, the harder you try to think about it, the further away from you it runs?
I know. It's right on the edge of your brain, and then and it drives you nuts until in the middle of the night at 2:30 in the morning, you wake up, and then boom, you remember it. It's like, what is up with that? I don't know. But anyway, you know, up to a certain point, folks that have certain levels of dementia can definitely profit from assistive technology. Beyond some point, some people may not be able to even deal with that. You know, reminders to take medications or turn off the stove or check this or check that. And then folks with, aside from those with dementia, with physical limitations, but let's say you're perfectly fine in your mind and whatever, but you're at home and your leg's in a cast from the, you know, thigh on down.
Right.
And it's just tough to get around. Some of these Internet of Thing home controls can be handy.
Yeah. There's the capability, if you and a loved one have smart speakers, you can set them up so that you can use them as a long-distance intercom. Or there's even an app that if it doesn't detect any noise, of movement for a specified period of time,
it'll call
say,
something.
Are you okay?
Right.
Please respond. And if not, then it will send out an alert.
Sort of like, what do they call that, Lifeline or
whatever.
Help I've Fallen, and there's an automatic list of people that will call.
But, you know, your mom has one of these things, but she would have to wear the pendant.
Right.
And so what happens if the person doesn't wear the pendant? You either get false alarms or... When it's needed, it doesn't kick in.
Well, yeah, it's not there.
So similar to the way that the Nest thermostat detects you moving around, and when it figures out that you're not home anymore, it either lowers the temperature or lets temperature rise a little bit more than, you know, to a certain parameter. If these devices do not detect movement, if they can't hear somebody making the normal sounds of rustling around and all that, then... and this could be a life-saving thing, because how many times have we heard horror stories? Or if somebody's yelling for help, then a smart speaker can be programmed to say, okay, who do I call to help? Now, you can't, because of liability, call 911 using a smart speaker.
Mm-hmm.
But you could certainly set it up so that it will alert, let's say a loved one has an app.
Right.
Or it calls their house, or if they have a smart speaker, turns it on and says, you know, Aunt Petunia has fallen and can't get up
right.
and needs help.
Right.
So that the thing about the pendant-based systems means you have to remember to wear the pendant. And if somebody's in the shower or something.
Well, you can, a lot of those are waterproof now, but you also have to be within a certain range in your home unless you have the more expensive model that allows you to go out and about around town and it hooks into the cellular systems. But still, what if you, you know, if you're out somewhere where you don't have that, then it's kind of a moot point. But people, you know, don't like wearing it. It's sort of like this signal,
it,
I guess.
It means there's something wrong with me.
Yeah. Right. And some people are very sensitive about that.
Yeah. So the technology, people talk about how intrusive and how it can be misused and how bad it is. But for a lot of folks, you know, it's like...
Well, it can allow them to be more independent longer in their own home, which I have yet to see an elder person who would not prefer to stay in their home rather than go to some sort of care facility. Most older folks fight that tooth and nail.
Yeah.
Understandably. They don't, you know, want to go there. And I can't say as I blame them.
Yeah. But, yes, be prudent. Maybe have it... Make sure the safeguards are in place. But if just a couple of lives are saved, you know, Aunt Petunia doesn't lay there on the floor for 3 days before somebody finds her.
My grandmother did.
Yeah.
Yes, it ended up putting her in a wheelchair for the rest of her life because she laid on her hip so long that it killed the bone.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's a nightmare.
Yep.
You know, when I was growing up, NASA. I remember being rolled out of bed at god-awful 30 in the morning to watch a launch.
Yeah, that was always so interesting stuff.
Yeah. And the voice of Mission Control, we have T-minus 4 minutes and 45 seconds. Yeah. And for an entire generation, that was the beginning of a fascination with science and technology.
Just watching the fuzzy video of Man on the Moon, which, you know, of course, there was a delay. Just the whole thing was pretty amazing. I distinctly remember where I was when I found out that the space shuttle had blown up as well.
Yeah. I was at home. And then, of course, when Challenger, I was working in radio when Challenger, when Columbia was destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Very sad situation.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, flying into space is not an easy thing. This is why it's taking so long. But private industry is really starting to make very fast advances, more so than government agencies. And of course,
There's no bureaucratic restrictions and you know, you have to do business with certain contractors and blah, 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 that slow that down.
Now, after some years of going back to the drawing board, literally, Virgin Galactic is starting to do test flights again. They had a very successful test flight earlier this week. And then there's SpaceX, which is, of course, a company founded by Elon Musk. But they have really, you know, their flights have almost become routine where we launch boosters, bring them back down to Earth, refurbish, reuse, which is a lot more efficient than throwing, you know, how many millions of dollars of hardware into the ocean with every launch. This started back in 2002. Interesting story. We were getting this... off of CNET. Very interesting, the founding. I didn't know this. In 2002, Musk, who was a Silicon Valley prodigy, he'd made a bunch of money off internet startups. He wanted to basically spend a huge chunk of money on a stunt to reinvigorate interest in funding NASA, because back in the early 2000s, space, you know, the shuttle program was winding down.
Yep.
U.S. had lost the edge in space innovation. So Musk and his friends traveled to Russia to buy a refurbished ICBM.
Oops.
Oh,
they
now.
Didn't get that in the country.
Yeah. The idea was to buy a Russian rocket cheap and use it to send plants or mice to Mars and maybe bring them back again. Ideally, the spectacle would get the world excited about space again. The meeting didn't go well, and Musk said, I can build my own darn rockets. SpaceX founded just a few months later. Musk had originally hoped to put a rocket on Mars by 2010. But of course, these things always take longer than you think.
Well, yeah, and then all the studies that have shown with folks living aboard for extended periods of time in the International Space Station indicate that there's a huge physical toll that our astronauts take from being in space, and lack of gravity, in addition to being exposed to a lot more. What do you call it? Radiation from the sun and whatnot. So,
by the way, that was our EAS system. Every radio station has these things, and this one happens to be in the room where we're at. So that was a test of the emergency alert system. This is only a test, and it probably cut us off for a few seconds. Receive weekly required test. Yeah. So what you're hearing is a printout,
which it does at random.
Yeah. Well,
sort of.
You're supposed to do it at least once a week.
Yeah.
But the times have to be randomized.
Right, that's what I mean.
Back to our story. The Falcon 9 has now done 50 missions over the past 8 years. That's a pretty impressive
track. That's impressive,
track,
yeah. Yes.
What really sets the 9 apart from the other competitors in the private space business is the ability to get a payload into orbit and then have the first stage come back. That didn't go well at first. A lot of people were laughing, saying, you know, well, it'll never work.
It was a complex deal, but it's been fairly consistently performing lately. So
The Falcon 9, latest generation, is designed to work for 100 launches, which is pretty impressive. You don't have to rebuild. Now, you have to refurbish it each time.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure you have to guard against fatigue and such like as well, the space shuttle experience and whatnot. So.
Now, they've already made money carrying cargo to the International Space Station on the Dragon spaceship. So far, no passengers have gone up in a Dragon. There's a second iteration. Late this year or early next year, we'll carry passengers to the ISS, which means we don't have to rely on climbing aboard a Soyuz anymore, hitchhiking rides into orbit.
Right. Also gives the industry more options of, you know, changing out people and getting supplies to the ISS and such like. Yeah.
Then, of course, earlier this year was the ultimate publicity stunt when Musk's personal Tesla Roadster
that was great. I forgot
was
about
sent
that.
Into space.
That's just awesome.
With the Falcon Heavy.
I'm sure that some people had a lot to say about adding another piece of space junk to the orbits around the planet, but this one is
pretty deep space orbit.
Is. I think it kind of goes around something or another.
And had quite a salute to Major Tom, and then a scene from the fantasy film Heavy Metal.
Mm.
The opening sequence to the movie Heavy Metal, which was an animation breakthrough back in the 1980s, is a astronaut flying a Corvette down to the surface. And so this is pretty cool. Did you ever play Pong? Remember
no.
when that was the king of the bars?
I thought it was stupid.
Okay, well,
it
really started things off, though. Boop, boop, boop.
Yeah, but what was the point? See, that's my problem.
Well,
just
it was like
practical.
A tennis match on a TV screen.
But I couldn't have cared less about that.
But actually programming these things got a lot of kids started into, because it was a simulator of physics. You could put spin on the ball if you did it properly. The The ball, which didn't really exist, is a model, a mathematical model that obeys the laws of physics, bouncing off walls, and you have to bounce it with a paddle and things like that.
Yeah, the angle, too, made a difference.
Yeah, you could put English on it and all that. To write the code to simulate all this stuff was pretty involved. Well, earlier this week, Sam Dabney, who helped create the console game Pong, died at the age of 81. He joined together with Nolan Bushnell to basically help start up what we now know as Silicon Valley during the 1970s. Of course, even just a basic computer could cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. Mr. Dabney tinkered in a workshop and built Atari's first consoles right there in his house.
He and Bushnell, I believe, were the founders of Atari. Which is still viable, is it not?
Yeah. Now, he had a the first commercial video game was Computer Space. It was a fail, but Pong was a big hit. At the peak, it was played on 35,000 consoles in bars and game rooms across the U.S. Ate a lot of quarters.
Oh, yeah. I just never saw the purpose in that. So I didn't do the gaming thing. That, of course, was one of the things in the early days that got people involved. And it was like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think I played it once or twice, or I watched somebody do it once or twice and say, oh, okay, that's cool, big deal.
Yeah.
And nothing to see here.
Some of those console games in the 70s and 80s were pretty neat, though. There was a neat driving game. Of course, Asteroids was a big hit. And you would hit these, and it was all done with vector graphics, but you would shoot a rock and then break up into smaller rocks, and it got more and more difficult as the screen filled with more and more things that could knock out your spaceship.
Yes.
Space Invaders was a big hit. Arcades of the 1980s were a very big deal. Speaking of big deals, we talked about tablets a little bit earlier. Google, after several attempts at marketing their own tablet. Now, of course, Google, Google, of course, gave us the Android. Well, they didn't give it to us. Google brought us the Android operating system, but they market it and license it to other people, but they've never been able to successfully market their own tablet. And it looks like, although there hasn't been an official announcement, it looks like Google is getting out of the tablet business, leaving it to folks like Samsung with the Galaxy series, and, of course, Lenovo has a series of tablets, and of course Apple's off doing their own thing. But it looks like Android tablets, Google wanted to do tablets using the Chrome operating system, but they've never really gotten traction. Let's see here.
Yes, I like this article that came from TechCrunch where the writer of it said that Google has quietly crept out of the tablet business. And they hope to do it somewhat anonymously, but people actually caught him at it. So here yesterday, gone today kind of thing, and it was here today, gone tomorrow. Anyway, it's just a kind of a sad commentary that they weren't able to get much traction in that field.
Interesting story out of China. Now, China, we've got, of course, Amazon, and eBay used to be really, really big. But, of course, Amazon is the huge retail online juggernaut. Doesn't do any business in China. China just builds fake junk to sell on Amazon.
Well, it's not fake. It's not like if you order it and you don't get it.
Well, they do a lot of counterfeit stuff.
Yes, there we go.
But their big online retailer called Alibaba, which is very cute, is working on, instead of, you know, you have to go to the post office to pick up your Amazon package, or there's Amazon lockers now. There's a couple of them here in our town where you go to pick up your package. Alibaba is working on a autonomous delivery robot that uses facial recognition to make sure it has the right recipient before it opens its doors. The G-Plus, being developed with Chinese company RoboSense, using LiDAR technology to avoid running into things. Of course, they don't have the liability issues there. San Francisco went so far as to ban the use of delivery
those
robots.
Those things, yep, so far, yep.
Well, we love bringing this show. If you want to write us, of course, boomertechradio@gmail.com. Give us show suggestions. We'll take constructive criticisms. You can also write us care of KCNR Radio at 1326 Market Street in Reading. But wherever you go and whatever you do, be safe and be good to each other. It might be the car or light truck that gets you to your job every day. Maybe your child drives it to school. Or perhaps your drivers deliver goods to the customers who keep your business going. The bottom line is, you rely heavily on that vehicle to be safe and reliable day after day, and that means regular maintenance by professionals trained in the latest automotive repair techniques. For Brenda and myself, that means Advanced Automotive is the only repair shop we trust with our personal vehicles. Advanced Automotive does everything they can to make car care easy. Founded in 1993 by Tim Morlock and now owned by his son Cody, carrying on a tradition of honest work at a fair price. Find out for yourself by visiting AdvancedAutoReading.com or go to RepairPal.com, or you could just call 530-244-4423. It's a great little repair shop that's a bit hard to find, but worth the effort. At 5756 F West Side Road in Reading. Advanced Automotive.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, community talk radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Reading.